Well, after the pleasures of emceeing last week's wonderful session, I have the good fortune to introduce another esteemed speaker this morning, Roger Collis, longtime friend, and yes, Catherine's husband. We're so glad you're all with us this morning to explore the powerful wisdom that arose out of ancient Celtic Christianity, and which 500 and 1,500 years later is renewing our own faith and understanding today. Our source book is focusing this morning on Chapter 3, The Sacred Flow, and the life of John Scotus Eriugena. This traveling scholar and wise man taught that spiritual truth and physical truth are both expressions of the same divine reality. Let me give you the intent of the chapter with the words of our author. John Scotus Eriugena sees the divine as a subterranean river flowing through the body of the earth and through everything that has being. This sacred river runs through us, and we can open to it now to become more fully alive. Well, our speaker today has spent a lifetime pulling together both physical and divine reality into tandem working order. He's a leader well-versed in the practicalities of organizations and their structures, which he also understands to possess dimensions of higher awareness and potential, in addition to the bottom line. Roger lived at the Findhorn community in 1971 in Northern Scotland and has retained a 50-year relationship with Findhorn and the Isle of Iona. He's a Findhorn trustee involved with the governance, financial, and spiritual issues that are facing the community today. Moving to the US in 1974, he helped co-found the Laurien Association. He has worked in both public and private sectors, consulting with communities and educational initiatives. He is passionate about building structures and systems that support the emergence of a new consciousness that holds a positive vision for the future. So let us welcome Roger now with our own blessing and appreciation for what he is going to bring to us this morning. As we did last week, Christine will sing the words and we will raise our hands to bless our speaker for of the morning that awaits us. Christine?
We bless you as you share your gifts of spirit, light, and insight. We welcome you with joy.
Thank you, Christine. And Roger, the Word in Life podium is yours.
Well, after that blessing, I think I'm going to start to cry. It is so powerful to be blessed by, you know, so many people at the beginning of a session, you know, such as this one. And such a reminder of the power of us giving to others and what can happen with our intention and love and care and through our hands. Christine, thank you for those lovely, lovely words. It's quite remarkable. And also the choir at the beginning of this, the choir was quite remarkable, the reflection of the Christ presence that lives in us and lives in the world. And actually, I hadn't heard that piece. Catherine, at the last minute, wanted you to hear it. So it set a wonderful tone for the session. And Pat, thank you so, so much for your introduction, warmth, and friendship, and knowing you as well over these years, and the work that you have done in many areas, particularly in the area of education, and working with my mother-in-law, June Christensen, in developing the human curriculum and all of what you did to uplift and bring positive change to the school systems in, you know, Santa Barbara County and elsewhere in the United States. So that's quite remarkable. And I often refer back to some of that material that gathers dust a bit on my bookshelf, Pat, but I still refer to. So it's very, I'm honored to actually follow Catherine, my wife of 50 years. So not only do I have this experience of Findhorn and Iona, but this marriage, and that has intertwined our lives both as a couple and as parents and now grandparents, so a shared spiritual work. But to play itself, which I want to do, because many of you don't know me, you know Catherine. I was born in southern England and went to a private school, and it was a school for the sons of clergy, but I was surrounded by sons of clergy. It was a boarding school, but that was exposure to Christian faith. It was actually through my mother, who had a very strong influence on my spiritual development. And it wasn't through any form of teaching, but it was her search and exploration of numerous pathways to come to God. And she built in this relationship with the church, and she was a member of the choir and loved to sing, but she also began to broaden beyond the church and the confines of the church at the time. And as a teenager, I too was on explorations. So in a way, we jointly together was on a path of discovery that went out of the bounds of the church. Likely, I would have become a minister, because the experience, the mystery of Christ has been so foundational for me in my life, continues today. Because within that experience, for me, there is the sense of the flow of the Christ in everyday things and in matter. But I was led, I received some of the early Findhorn literature. I went to Scotland, and Findhorn is outside of Inverness on the eastern side of Scotland, and it's a spiritual community that was first formed in 1962 by a husband and wife, their children, and a co-worker. Perhaps they didn't quite know what they were up to and what would eventually emerge, but they follow inner listening and the discovery of the God within as a resource for guidance and support and wisdom. And they forged a relationship with the land and with the growing of vegetables and the planting of gardens. And this cooperation with nature that they began to explore became quite well known within certain circles in Britain, particularly. But once the publication Horn story came about, it was circulated. This was a cooperation not just with physical elements of nature and good organic husbandry, but also working with the intelligence of nature. The recognition that the natural world was something that could be loved and tended, but within the withinness of plants and within the withinness of the soil, their intelligence, and one could form a relationship with that. And Paul Hawken wrote a book, The Magic of Findhorn, and a spiritual community emerged, and it continues today. Very diverse in terms of its activities, in terms of renewable energy and the companies that have been formed, and the replanting of the Caledonian temperate forests of northern Scotland. But it's practicality in action that was so important, the love of where you are, the love of what you're doing, and the love of whom you're with. And that was in 1970 when I first was there. And at that same time, I went to Greece. I drove with some friends to Athens, around Albania, because you couldn't go through Albania. And I was able to visit Delphi and had a number of discussions with my compatriots about the meaning of life. And there on the Delphi cults is, if man, man thyself, and you will know the world. And it is the sense of that within us contains the macrocosm, and within the macrocosm is our microcosm and this wonderful interflow of connection. And with Iona, I went there with two friends, still in 1970. It was a very compact period for me. But I knew little of Celtic Christianity. I didn't know anything about the rebuilding of the abbey that George MacLeod had started, the islanders. But I was on an Arthurian quest, a knight of the Holy Grail, so to speak. You know, and I'm 18 years old. And it really got me reflecting at the time, what are young men in particular looking for in this period? For me, the Grail was a quest to discover for myself a sense of my own calling and relationship. And when I went to Iona, I just walked the island in the rain and in the mud, getting myself lost. But I felt a strong, strong connection to the place. And John Philip talks about this, and we've brought this up at other times, about the coming home that one can experience in these places where the veil is thin. And that is very, very strong and remains for me today. It was like an embrace of friends, and that friendship with me, Iona, continues. And so these two areas of spiritual community that in one side of Scotland and on the west side in the Hebrides, the Iona on the other, and continue to go and feel that sense of connection. One of the discoveries for me about Iona and with Findhorn is the fact that not everyone is able to go to these places. And so I began to explore the sense of Iona being a mirror of what living in me, living in us. And the power of the Celtic world looks to the divine inside of each. And just as a bit of history, the forming of the Laurian Association in 1975, way where a group of us exploring what community was, but not the community of living in place, but a community that lives in our hearts and in our spirits, and a spirit of community that is shared with others. And so it's more a community of consciousness than it is a series of monastic settlements or places like Findhorn and spiritual centers. And it also is bringing the sacred into the ordinary, into the everyday life, so that one isn't necessarily having to do something special, but one can actually have that access to spirit wherever one is, in the workplace, in business, in relationships, wherever, being a good parent. And for me, that is really foundational to my spiritual work. And I see actually very foundational in the early church, because they didn't have the luxuries that we have today. And when you think of them gathering, they were gathering by the light of the moon or by candle and torchlight. They didn't have electricity. They didn't have all the amenities. So that connection to the natural world, to the flow of spirit, to all of what is there, was very alive for them. It wasn't an abstraction. It can be an abstraction, and we can remove from it and talk about it as if it's something else. But to the the early Celtic church was something that just part of. They weren't having that sense of disconnect and separation. Some of what we've done is through the course of time, and John Philip does an extraordinary piece of work illustrating this in his book, as others have done as well. But I'm indebted very much because I learned a lot through the reading of this book, of this resurgence of the Celtic spirit and how it has application for us today. And I'm not going to, I stumbled over this word eregina for so long. And I don't know whether many as well. So I decided to call him Jotus because it was easy to talk about it rather than eregina, which for me was a bit of a mouthful. But in the run of his life and doing a little bit of research, I felt almost resonance and connection with his spirit and what he was living through as this wandering monk, a scholar, someone who was felt so passionate, excited about life and about connection to spirit, that he put himself at times in harmony, but developed a cosmology of relationship rather than a theology. And I think for me, that's what endeared him, this sense of cosmology and theology. And I think that's perhaps why the Imperial Church and many saw him as a threat. He walking about the sacredness of all things, that subterranean sacred flow that is in all matter, and to be experienced, not something just to be talked about, but actually we have access to that in our everyday. And of course, the council were not too happy. And that endeared him even more to me, that, you know, it was in the 16th century that they were still talking about this and trying to find ways to trivialize, you know, his texts. So obviously he had enormous power and influence in the time, and he was a threat to many. John Philip talks about, you know, the inner authority. And I believe that's what John Scotus Erigena had inside of himself, was a sense of inner knowing. And I feel it's so, so important that we too have that experience of inner knowing and the sense of authority added well inside, rather than looking to the external authorities of the world. And I don't need to tell you, because it's been discussed, this, the conflict between the early church and an empire, as John Philip likes to talk about it, and the rifts and the splits that existed then that are playing out now in our society, and very strongly. And I won't go into the reasonings and the details around that, around Christian nationalism and the rise of authoritarianism in the world, but that danger exists. And so it's so, so important that we, resting on the shoulders of this Celtic spiritual impulse, can find a relationship and have that inner authority within ourselves as individuals and in groups and in communities. One aspect of Erigena's work, in order to have that relationship with the sacred flow, to me is around co-creativity and collaboration. That we don't look to the divine as something that is superior or almighty or telling us what to do, and that we are children, but we have that ability inside of ourselves to co-create and forge a relationship with the divine. Because, as Eugenia is saying, that lives in us. We are the divine. Every part of us is the divine. And so we may play mind games. It may be very difficult for us to experience and understand. And we may look to a narrative, both social and spiritual, that makes us sinful or makes us feel unworthy. But the essential nature of the Celtic is that we are worthy because we are gods in the making. And that's very difficult for people to grasp because we have been taught, for at least many of us, that we exist in a fallen state. And Matthew Fox does a wonderful job of talking about, you know, the original sin. And if we can begin to weave together a story about ourselves as worthy and have the experience of the divine in the very cells of our body, then that division between physical and spiritual disappears. We can become whole and undivided. And to me, that's the cosmology that Eugenia is postulating. And it's the cosmology of the work such as of Joseph Campbell in the looking at the story and the myths of our time, that we have to find a way to bridge to one another and to bridge the differences so that and we can actually see the divine in all of what we're doing and the divine in the other. But we won't see the divine in the other unless we can somehow have the experience of it inside of ourselves at some level of our being. At least accept the fact that that is possible. And I would suggest that what John Philip is actually presenting to us is a radical spirituality. Now, we talk about it, and he writes about it, and he's very, you know, gentle in his approach. But how this is lived out in our lives is actually very, very radical. Because it means that through our inner authority and knowing, we take on responsibilities for connecting and being a source of creativity and generativity in relationship to where we are. And we are not passive receptors of spiritual life. We don't look and open and empty, although we can, and be filled by God's Spirit. But within the Eugenian model, we can also generate and create and be part of the flow of life. In the environmental movement, there's enormous amount of energy now going towards climate change. And we know the interconnectedness of life. Ecologists and for many, many years have talked about this connection to the natural world and how it's been broken. And we have to find a way to reweave that connection. In fact, our future is dependent on that reweaving. So activism in various forms is so, so important, however we choose to do that. And that can be simply, you know, growing organic food or working with regenerative agriculture or taking efforts to combat climate change. But there's also another ecology that I want to talk to you about, and that's the ecology of the inner worlds. And for me, somehow, we have to reconcile the fact that we have dreams and we have insights and we have a rich interior life and that we are much, much more than our physical bodies, minds and emotion and senses. That there is a second ecology of which the Celts had the experience of in various forms. in which many, in fact, I would say all indigenous cultures in one way knew about. But somehow we have broken the connection to those, to the inner worlds, and we have trivialized that connection to angels and to that which we can't see. And I would like to postulate that if we're dealing with these global challenges, particularly climate change and the like, we also have to have the inner activism as well as the outer one. And the inner activism is actually to find that way, as Eugenia did, to discover that connection that binds everything together. That's that sacred flow. And in the book, chapter 3, that John Philip is describing, he talks about Eugenia and the first book of creation, the second book of creation. And when I was reading, I was thinking, well, maybe one day we will have a third book of creation. And the third book of creation is our relationship to the inner worlds and our ability to experience the vastness of that which we can't see, the non-physical realities of life. I would suggest that we have to find a language. We have to learn from one another how to access this deep part of ourselves. And we have to find a way to call upon it and make it part of our human community. Because if we're stuck in thinking that we are the pinnacle of Earth evolution and that all of creation is centered around us as humans, then we have limited ourselves in our understanding and closed the doors of having an experience of the other worlds. And so for me, I've become passionate over the course of my life now about how do we articulate, substantiate, and make this inner experience that we each have normal and second nature. You know, rather than something that is special, that you have to go to special places or special people or have special experience. It's actually very normal. The Celtic Church normalized it, but somehow in the course of the centuries, we've put it aside and ridiculed it and trivialized it and talked about it as being bad or evil or we're uncomfortable around it. So I want to find a way, and in Eugenia's words, to access this and bring it to the fore. And so I put that out there as something for our consideration and exploration. Tied to this is this whole notion of how we look to the future. And I remember John Philip and Catherine, I think together, we're talking about the dreaming and imagining into the future. And that requires us to develop capacities that perhaps are new capacities, or perhaps faculties of perception that are broader than what we're used to. And we're not going to be able to fix the problems going forward deal with the tools of the past, that somehow we are being asked to take this radical step in our human evolution, you know, like a software program needing an upgrade. Well, we're being upgraded. And if we're not being able to upgrade it through our own volition and our own will, then it will be upgraded for us. Because the intelligences of the world, and if one thinks of the planet Gaia as a living intelligence and presence, then Gaia herself is in the process of her own, you know, evolution. And we are part of that life, as are all the creatures of this world and all of the physicality that makes up Gaia. We are all together in a process of a massive transformation. And climate change is an indicator of where we've got out of balance. And arguably one could say, you know, pandemics and our encroachment into the natural world unthinkingly is also an indicator of where we're out of balance. So we've lost the boundaries of what our relationship is with ourselves and with each other, and they've broken down and dissolved, but dissolved into a mixture of different points of view, and in many, well, most cases, I need to tell you, dissension and fracturing. So the inner authority, the work that Irigena is saying to us, the vision of the Celtic Church, the way to go forward is to present a unified sense and of who we are, and to have the experience of ourselves as whole beings, not complete, but the movement towards wholeness and the acceptance of who we are as divine beings. And this is very difficult because our human personalities, the makeup of who we are, carries the trauma, the ancestral experiences of where we've done enormous atrocities to one another and continue to do so. So how is it possible that we can be divine beings, and yet another side is we're doing these atrocities to each other every day? And that reconciliation needs to come into play right now, because otherwise we will continue to project onto each other and to others all that is different, our own problems. So the inner authority, getting in touch with the divine flow, the sacredness of life, is that sense of entering situations where you yourself are the sacred flow that can unblock. I mean, for myself, you know, just a few examples, you know, I can remember needing to go to China and begin the work of forging relationships between the US and China, not because someone needed, but because the soul of that country, it was in the process of a massive economic, social upheaval, as it was seeking to be part of this new world that we are creating. And so, you know, the flow of life opened doors to work with the Chinese government and with Chinese institutions there, to not to talk about the spiritual world, but to be an embodiment of it, so they could see another way of experiencing Western society, rather than us being a consumer society, you know, rather than us trying to tell the world how to behave. But they can see the beginnings of an embodiment. And to me, embodiment is a key word here, because this isn't an academic exercise. We're not studying something. We're actually living a life and discovering that we have to bring it into our everyday living and be part of the, you know, the sacred flow. But while I was working in China, the Soviet Union was breaking apart. And all of a sudden, I had an invitation to work with the newly forming Ukrainian government to look at ways to bring a vision for that part of the world as the Soviet Union was breaking up. Because I think it became evident to us all that unless there was a unified vision, the ethnic and cultural divisions would start to crystallize. And so early on, it required intervention. And it required the intervention to bring flow into that part of the world. So that's, you know, speaking of what I tried to humorously try to do. and I partly was able to do that, because I had the government on my side, the Ukrainian government on my side. I had the State Department coming and joining in, because I had to provide the leadership and the vision, because others weren't able to have that unified vision to see the necessity of flow as enabling resolution and healing. And I went, you know, to Chernobyl at the time, and It was 3 years after the near nuclear meltdown. But it was then that I began to realize that I wanted to be involved in, you know, sort of nuclear remediation and the cleanup of these nuclear sites, which later on in my life I began and to do working with the Department of Energy. But none of this came about because of my academic background. None of it came about because somehow I was well connected and had resources. It all came about because I jumped into the flow of life and took risk and put myself out there and to the best of my ability, embody the very qualities that Eugenia is talking about, which is being in touch with that subterranean flow, that we are gods in the making. And if that's the case, then all of our situations around us are opportunities for connection to be made and for us to bless. And we don't have to do it overtly. You know, we don't have to talk about this. It can just be second nature, part of who we are. And so the power of the human personality and... I take that back, not the power of the human personality. Understanding the function of how the human personality is in relationship to sacred flow and being able to integrate the various parts of ourselves and not have them being fractured or in conflict is so essential going forward, because without it, we do, you know, a spiritual bypass. We have spiritual experience. We may do a lot of things, but the very entry point into sacred flow, we are missing for whatever reason. So inner authority, inner knowing creates discernment. And discernment in this day is so important with fake news and all of the images that we are bombarded with. And that we, through Word and Life and the many other communities, have the responsibility, really, to provide another way of seeing the world and sharing that and being able to meditate and hold that energy, so to be an antidote to that energy that is eroding and trying to make life difficult. And that's a strong, strong energy at the moment on our planet. So we have an enormous task. So we are St. Bridget and we are John Scotus or Regina now. And we have to take up that mantle ourselves. And, you know, there's lots more that I could say, but I would like to sort of conclude a bit by talking about the world is coming. Yeah, you know, certain things are breaking apart. We know this, that there is a certain structures just don't serve us anymore. We may hold on, we may be attached, it may be uncomfortable, but there is a change afoot, and those structures just won't exist in the future. They just can't. They don't serve us. And something else is trying to break through. A new world is trying to be born. At least I believe this. And that's foundational to the spiritual work, is to give flesh and bone to that new world. It is heaven in earth, and substantiate it as best we can. But we have to also be able to live in the tension of the two. And that's what Catherine and I very much focus on in terms of our teaching and counseling work, and is how do you stand in the tension of what is disappearing, the pain and the grief on the one hand, and a world that is being born on the other, and to be in that point of the center and hold them. And coming back to some of my remarks about the Christ and the Eucharist, standing in that, one becomes the embodiment and the holding And that's the inner authority. It's the knowing. It's the Christ within, seeing the Christ in others. It is the Christ in matter. It is the planetary Christ, and it is the cosmic Christ. And they all come together. And that energy is flow, and it's sacred, it's powerful, it's potent. And Eugenia knew it. Many of the Celts that John Philip is talking about knew it, Pelagius. And going forward, George MacLeod knew it in the rebuilding of the Abbey, the courage that he took. Teilhard knew it, you know, and his writings are remarkable in terms of his worldview, and his books all coming after his death. So what we need to have is a way that we can experience and talk about it now and not after we are dead. And people look back and at this time and say, well, you know, it was interesting, but this, that, and the other happened. I can go on about the importance of this and the passion, and I won't, because I really want us to go into breakout sessions and to discuss between ourselves. And then after that, coming back, I can answer questions and we can dialogue together, because to me, this is not academics. I'm not teaching anything. We are together working on this, and not one of us has an answer, but together we do. So I'm very much an experiential learner, hands up, let's work together. So that's the spirit of going into the breakout session and the spirit of your questions as well. And so thank you so, so much for this opportunity, for this focused time where I can just pour forth my spirit and share that with you. And perhaps it was that blessing at the very beginning that turned on the spigot of my emotion. Or maybe it was that I had to upstage Catherine, who did such a fine job last time. Anyway, thank you so, so much and love. So I'll let Tim do his magic and put everyone in the breakout sessions.
Thanks, Roger. Would you like to introduce the question that I just put in the chat for everybody? And then we'll move on along to our conversations.
And what is the question?
Our capacity to know the divine flow in all things is deep within us. What are the qualities of this flow for you? Anything else you want to add to that before we jump in?
No, I it's the qualities. What is it for you? You know, we can read about this for other people, but what is it for you? And there isn't a right answer. There's just the sharing of it. And in many cases, we don't know. And the don't knowing in and of itself is powerful. It really is. So sometimes we don't need to make things up, for sure. So have a fabulous breakout session. And Tim, don't put me in one, please.
Okay. You might get an invitation, but you just don't take it.
Okay. I won't. Okay.